Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, special guest, former GHC Junior Heavyweight Champion. He's been in WWF, he's been in WCW, he's been in Ring of Honor. He's been basically everywhere, pro wrestling, nowhere, you name it. He is Mr. Mike Modest. Mike, welcome to the two-man power trip. How you doing?
Right on, man. Thank you for having me on, man.
What is going on in your world? What have you been up to?
You know, not a whole lot. I'm just being a dad, really. I've got a 5-year-old daughter, and not with her mother, but I have my daughter every weekend. So that kind of ended wrestling for me, really. I've had a few offers lately to wrestle, and I'm just really not that interested anymore. It means taking a weekend from my daughter. So I've been doing some acting. In fact, I've got an audition tomorrow for for Ross Department Stores. So I've been doing that, and I really enjoy doing that. Acting's a lot of fun. The department store thing might not be the funnest gig I've ever done, though. So that's kind of what I'm doing. I'm just being a dad.
But as far as wrestling, are you officially retired or unofficially retired?
Unofficially retired. I'm not even retired at all. I mean, I could totally go out and do it. I got a call from a friend of a student of mine and also a friend of mine, Vinny Massaro, and another guy named Big Ugly. They were wondering if I wanted to, have a 6-man with them and against some youngsters, one of them being Titus Alexander, Big Ugly's son, and he's gotten some pretty good momentum lately in the wrestling world, and he's a real talented kid, and it's just like, but man, I when it comes down to it, when someone hits me up and they're like, hey, why don't you come do this? The the thought of telling my daughter, you know, I did that with my sons. I had two sons when I was in Noah, and I missed a lot, you know, with them. And you know, this is probably my last child, you know, and so I just want to do it right this time, and I don't want to miss any weekends because of, you know, some quick little payday, you know, and I'm past that now. It's, you know, it's just like, I don't know. I'm not looking for a big break. I'm not looking to make waves in the wrestling industry anymore. I'm not, you know, it's just not my priority anymore.
So not retired officially yet, like you said, unofficially, but you're still go. You could still go, basically, is what I mean. You could if you wanted to.
In fact, I've done some seminars, you know, just working with young kids, younger guys and stuff, and sharing my knowledge and my experience, you know, what I experienced in the industry. I've done that, you know, a few times, and I love getting back in the ring a little bit. I don't know. It's just one of those things, you know. It's really, really hard to not be a part of it. When Vinny called me the other day, you know, I was really torn, you know, but ultimately my daughter wins out every time.
Gotcha. I gotcha. When a lot of people think of you and they think of your career, do they think of Beyond the Mat first, or do they think of no? Like, what do they think of? Because I always think of, like, okay, Beyond the Mat, like that's like a huge kind of like coming out party for you in the wrestling business.
Yeah, it was. An interesting thing about that movie is, you know, it was pretty close to reality, but that was not my first WWE tryout. That was like, gosh, that was my last. which is interesting. It was portrayed as my first, but it was actually my last. And
That is interesting. Yeah.
yeah, I had a whole bunch of tryouts with them. And I think the overall feeling was that I was just not big enough. I wasn't what they were looking for. I mean, for goodness sakes, I was smaller than Coco Beware. I remember when I got into the wrestling industry, I thought, you know what? At least I'm taller than Coco Beware, you know?
Yep. Yeah.
And turned out I was just a touch shorter than him.
Wow.
So I just wasn't what they were looking for, especially at the time. You know, shortly after, they were looking for smaller guys. I was just the wrong size at the wrong time, you know. And I actually, when Barry Blaustein hit me up to do that, the film, and to do the tryout, I was already convinced that WWE didn't want anything to do with me. And so at first I was like, no, I'm really not interested, you know. And it's so funny. It's just like, I don't know, it's just like with ladies, you know, if you're really not interested in them, you have a whole bunch of them trying to, you know, talk to you.
Yes.
And the wrestling industry is like that too. When you really don't want anything to do with it, or you're just like, yeah, no, I'm, you know, this is someone else's opportunity. I'm not really interested, but they really wanted me in this spot. So, pardon me. So I basically said, well, the only way I'll do it is if I'm guaranteed 10 minutes, because the typical way a tryout would go is you're told you have 10 minutes, then, you know, a few minutes before you go out there, they're telling you got five. Then in the gorilla room, they're telling you got three. And then when you get on the ring, they're telling you go home in a minute and a half, you know. So it makes it really hard sometimes to build a story, which that's what I do. I was never the fancy, flashy kind of wrestler. I'm much more a storyteller, and So it takes a moment to educate the people on what's happening in the story, you know? So I wanted that 10 minutes, and I was told by everyone, Barry Blaustein, Jim Cornette, and higher ups, I was told that I had that 10 minutes. So Tony and I get out there, and then I don't even know when it was, but it was very quick into the match. I would say within a minute to a minute and a half, the referee was calling go home. And I just looked at him and I was like, nope, not doing that. And the reason why it was my last tryout anyways. I'd been to this dance before, and this time I was going to finish the song, you know. I wasn't going to be cut off at the intro, at the drum solo or anything. I wanted to actually have that shot, you know. And my other concern was, I knew that Draws was in the film as like this young guy trying to break down the doors, you know, and trying to move from one sport to another. And that was a compelling story. And I saw right away that I was in danger of being the wah, wah, wah story, you know, the sad sack. Oh, they were told to, you know, finish the match early because the crowd didn't like them, you know. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want that to be my mark in that film. I didn't want them to tell that story about me. And so when they told me to go home, I just said no. And Tony and I finished our match. By the end of the match, within the minute and a half that they were saying go home, the crowd was actually getting into it. They were getting what was going on. And they popped really big for the finish. And we were just the opening match. Neither of us had any TV time, no nothing. And we won over a WWE crowd, which is really tough to do in the first place.
Yep.
You know, and so they really couldn't paint this picture of us not being ready or us not being good. So, you know, I don't know. I know I kind of take stories and just kind of start going off with it. But, yeah, that's – and as far as what you were saying, like what do people know me as, I think it's how smart they are to the industry. I've had people – that are just housewives and not interested in wrestling at all, but they happen to watch Beyond the Mat because, you know, I'm their bartender, or they've met me somewhere along the line. I'm a family friend or whatever. And they're really impressed with the movie. And I've had people, you know, recognize me certain places because of the film still. But I think if you really follow wrestling at all, then I think you would probably know me more for Noah for Japan.
How long was that match with Tony, by the way?
It was right around 10 minutes.
Oh, so it did almost go the full 10. Okay.
Yeah.
Were they pissed when you walked in the back? Did they say anything about
that? Oh, man. So the only one that was pissed, it's funny you mentioned that. So I could hear Bruce Pritchard on the referee's earpiece. He was yelling so loud that I could hear him. And he was saying, you know, go home, go home. Does he know what fucking go home means? And wow. He was pissed when I walked through the door, you know, walked through the curtain. He was very upset. He asked me if I knew what go home meant. And I said, yeah, Bruce. I said I was told I had 10, and I'm taking my 10. You know, that's what I was told. And it was a guarantee. I wasn't part of the WWE tryout system at that moment.
I was a part of a film being filmed, and the WWE had an agreement with that film company and right, with the producers right. of that film. So, like, you know, I want to make it clear, I wouldn't have done that had I been there as a participant of a WWE event.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Yep.
This was my perfect excuse to not listen to what they said and to do my own thing, you know, I wasn't going in business for myself either, because I was told by the producers of Beyond the Mat and Jim Cornette and everyone that had represented themselves to me, I was told by everyone that I had that 10 minutes. So I knew that Bruce was pissed about it, but what are you going to do?
Is that why you don't get signed and Tony does get signed and he goes to the Funkin' Dojo? Is that have to do with it?
No, well, you know, I don't think so. I don't think that had to do with it. It could have been the NBC Wrestling Secrets Exposed. It could have been, Tony's a really big guy.
Yeah, he's a lot bigger than you. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And also, you know, a very, very accomplished amateur wrestler as well.
Yep.
Very talented guy. So, no, but I had a lot of opportunities with WWE. And so this was just another, you know, to me. And I knew it was probably going to be my last.
When that happens and you don't get signed there, how quickly do you kind of get in touch with WCW, or how quickly does WCW get in touch with you?
Almost immediately. Yeah.
And who is it? Like, who gets in touch with you from WCW?
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. It's blowing my mind that I can't remember his name. Oh. No. So, no, it wasn't Kevin Sullivan. It was this older gay gentleman. And I'm just drawing a blank on his name right now, and it's pissing me off. Yes, Jim Barnett. Thank you. Jim Barnett contacted Roland and APW and myself, and he was the one that he saw a similarity in me and Kevin Sullivan, and he came, he watched me wrestle, and basically told Kevin Sullivan, hey, this guy is the real deal, you know, he's an actual wrestler, and because I know how to do some amateur wrestling too. I'm not near as good as Tony Jones is, honestly.
Right.
And not as big. You know, Tony's always, you know, he's always got that weight advantage on me, you know. He's always been a heavier, especially in the midsection, you know, than myself. So he's got more weight to push around. He's gonna love that I said that.
So does WCW want to use you for the cruiserweight division? Like, what do they say, or what do they want? Like, what do they want to do with you? They like you, you're a good hand, but what do they want to do with you?
Yeah, right away. Kevin Sullivan and Bob Mould and Ed Ferrara were all very high on me, and they were going to put the belt, the cruiserweight belt that Prince Iaukea was wearing at the time, and or the artist, and so they were going to put that belt on me. And then what happened was, when I showed up at South Padre Island, they Mike Graham and Terry Taylor informed me that Kevin Sullivan had been fired, and that Bischoff's crew was coming back, and Bischoff and Russo were coming back, and they had put a freeze on all title changes. So briefly, I was going to do the job for the artist, And then within a half an hour, someone came to me, both Terry Taylor and Mike Graham came to me and said, actually, so it's been changed. You're going to go over on him still, but it's going to be a non-title match. So that's what the way it was explained to me going into it. But on live TV, they really didn't do a very good job explaining it. And there was a little bit of confusion at first as to, you know, did I win the belt or not? But you would think the fact that they didn't hand it to me would be enough for people to understand.
Right, right.
But after that, I was released pretty quickly by Bischoff and Russo. Then they hired me back about 6 months later for a tryout with Chris Daniels that was also going to be a part of an angle with Scott Steiner, where he was going to come in and beat us up with some kind of workout tool or whatever, come out and destroy our match, you know, as it was going. And that's the one where Chris ended up slipping on the belt, on the ropes, and fell on his neck. Pretty bad, you know, looking bump, but thank God he was able to, you know, still walk after that and still has a great career, you know, thank God. So, but yeah, so they brought us back. And then when they hired us, when Bischoff hired us, the idea was that he and Russo had come up with was that Chris Candido and I were going to be a tag team, and that we were going to be Scott Steiner's mini-me's, like his little minions that, you know, because we were both kind of short, buff little dudes with blonde hair, and then you got Big Papa Pump, you know, sending us to do his dirty work, you know, and then if someone needs to do a job, you know, I could be the job guy, or maybe Chris, you know, but probably I would have been the job guy. Yeah. between the three of us, obviously. But that's okay, man. I don't mind being the Arn Anderson of a crew, you know. Someone, it was crazy, like years and years ago, someone mentioned to me that, you know, Arn Anderson was the jobber of the Horsemen. And I was like, no, get out of here. He's amazing. There's no way. And I go back and I look and I'm like, God darn it, that, you know, if they weren't right. But it doesn't matter. If you do your job well enough, people really don't care that much. You know, you can still be a star. And so, yeah, that's what happened with that, man. It was a lot of fun. After my match with the Prince, I went up and I sat and I watched Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair wrestle from my balcony. And I sat there and drank a bunch of beer, and because I had been dieting and really, you know, not eating anything fun for quite a while. And after that match, I felt like, you know what, man, you deserve a couple of beers. And then, you know, to be able to watch Hogan and Flair wrestle below was just amazing. Just a real gift, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. When you look at it, though, with WCW, with 2001, when you're around late 2000, 2001, when they bring you and Daniels back, were you officially signed to a contract, though? Like, were you back in the fold officially?
Yeah, both times. So it was really interesting. The first time I was there, I had a contract, and it was signed by me, and I sent it into legal. And it was went to J.J. Dillon's office, and J.J. Dillon, the, you know, manager extraordinaire that he is, he was already in the loop on this change that was happening. So he held my contract. and so it was never signed by legal. And what was screwed is I had already given notice to my job. I had a pretty good job at a furniture company, Court Furniture. And so I had already quit. And now once this thing happened, I had to go begging for my job back, and it was just a nightmare, you know? And so I didn't really have anything to stand on. The second time around, I actually had the contract signed. And when WWE purchased, I was a part of that process of elimination where, you know, every couple of weeks or so, a few more, you know, guys would get the axe. And Johnny Ace was in touch with me for a long period of time. And he assured me that they were going to probably keep me, but they didn't. I was one of the very last cuts, but I was really grateful still the way it went down, because I was on contract getting paid for another year after the WWE purchased. So it was nice. I was working independence and still getting paid that money. They allowed us to do that. So it was pretty cool of them to do that.
Yeah, it's almost a good thing you got signed when you did, because, you know, you could kind of get double paid almost. Like you said, work the indies and get paid for the rest of the WCW contract, because, you know, Vince bought them out, and they still technically, Turner still technically owed you that money.
Right, right.
Yeah, did you want to go to WWF though at that point, or were you like, "Eh, this is kind of good. You know, I'm getting paid, and I can work the indies and get paid."
You know, I always wanted that WWE contract. I mean, anybody does. If you're in the wrestling industry, you know that getting that WWE contract is the possibility of having a name that will make you money forever, like the Honky Tonk Man. Greatest intercontinental champion ever in the history of the WWF or WWE. The Honky Tonk Man and these guys, even a guy like Tito Santana, Greg Valentine, these guys are superstars forever. They could be in walkers and still be doing, you know, trade shows and stuff and selling autographs and pictures and books or whatever. So I always did want that, but there's just a time where I just realized it wasn't going to happen. And it was right around the time that Beyond the Mat came. And I really did want to go to Japan. That was always a real goal of mine. I always admired the sport aspect of most of the companies in Japan. I mean, I don't want to blanket statement it, because they do. I mean, they are the inventors of, wrestling the invisible man.
Right.
And other silly things, you know, that they've done, different wrestling companies over there. And I mean, it's entertainment, whatever, but I loved like All Japan was what I really watched, and New Japan. And both of those companies took wrestling very seriously. And, you know, so I was beyond honored when Misawa ended up coming to California and they ended up picking up a few of us and taking us to Noah and letting us wrestle there.
That is amazing, because they all leave, you know, they have that mass exodus from All Japan, and they go to Noah, and Noah becomes the biggest organization in Japan for several years. I mean, Misawa, Kobashi, Akiyama, I mean, those are the guys, and they were selling out the Tokyo Dome. They were doing the huge shows. So that mass exodus not killed All Japan, because they're still around today, but I mean, it made them less than, and it made Noah the number one organization in Japan by far.
Yeah. Well, I mean, New Japan has pretty much always been number one. They're the big money company. But Noah was, to me, I guess, the NWA of Japan at that time. And I liked the concept of what they did, the idea of taking different styles and, you know, having lucha, having smaller guys, having big guys, you know, all kinds of different styles, and, you know, bringing it into there. One of the things that I thought was really interesting was, and I learned this very quickly, when guys go to Japan, they think what they want is, you know, a person that wrestles their style. And that really isn't what they want. They've got a whole bunch of people there that wrestle their style. The reason they're bringing you in is for flavor. They're bringing you in for international flavor. They want you to do your thing. They want you to do your style. And I got very popular with the Modesto smile, you know, just doing a big thumbs up with a real cheesy smile.
Yeah.
And I would do it. I would fake an elbow and then step on the guy's stomach and walk on him and then kind of smile to the crowd and do the big thumbs up. And the crowd would go crazy for it because it wasn't something they were getting from the regular Noah talent. The Noah talent wasn't really doing that. And what else was really cool was how me doing that and that getting a reaction and getting popular, some of the Japanese wrestlers started queuing in on that. And then, you know, for example, I would do it at the beginning of the match, maybe. I would start a match with sternness, and maybe it was me and Hashi, and I would slam him and go for the fake elbow, step on his tummy, and do a big smile, right? And now here comes Akiyama and Saito, and they shit-can everybody, and they slam me, and they all hit an elbow on me, and Akiyama fakes it, steps on me, and then they all thumbs up me. You know, as I'm getting up, I see them, they're all doing the thumbs up back to me. And that would get major reaction because, again, they're stepping out of their norm, you know, and the fans really loved seeing the very serious Japanese wrestlers kind of let loose a little bit and do a little entertaining, you know.
Could definitely see that. When you do get brought in, is Harley Race like the booker for the gaijins? Like who's like the person, or like you said, was it literally just Misawa? It's like, I like this guy and we're booking him.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was. It was Misawa and Ryu Nagata. And Ryu liked us, liked me, Donovan, Bison, and a few other guys. They ended up bringing over. They brought over some guys when Donovan and I formed Pro Wrestling Iron. They brought over a few guys from there. But there wasn't really a gaijin booker or anything. But Harley Race was also bringing in talent. And so, like, they were heavy with foreign talent. At that time, you know, it would be like three of Harley's guys and then three of my guys, basically.
When they put you and Donovan Morgan together, I know obviously you guys have a big history together, a big past together. Was that the idea to make you guys a tag team there?
Yeah. Yeah, we were a tag team and, you know, Donovan was typically the guy that went down, and I didn't even realize it at first. Like, it's so weird. I didn't even understand why they were doing that. And then
when I got my title match against Kanemaru, they mentioned that I was undefeated.
Wow.
And I was like, huh? How am I undefeated? We've lost a shitload of matches. And then I thought about it and I was like, oh, but my shoulders didn't land.
Donovan lost, yeah.
Donovan lost. So technically, I'm undefeated. And so I had this match against Kanemaru, and they when I found out that I was winning the title, I couldn't believe it, honestly. It was the last thing in the world I saw coming. And, of course, a major honor, but it was also a kind of a mixed blessing in a way. They for some reason stopped representing the belt on television and they stopped promoting me on television. And I never really quite understood why they did that. The opening of the show just wouldn't have the GHC junior belt on it. They would have the junior tag belts, the GHC junior tag belts, but not the junior singles. And so it kind of really, honestly, it pissed me off. And I didn't understand why they would do that. Why put a belt on somebody and then hide the belt and then hide that individual on television, you know? And it didn't make sense to me, but for some reason it made sense to them, and that's what they did. And I ended up asking for the belt to be taken away from me because I just wanted to go back to being a talent that was represented in magazines and represented on television. It was weird. At the time, there was even times where people wouldn't, they'd go, oh, you still wrestle for Noah? Because I had not been on television in such a long time. We would go to towns and people would go, oh, you're here with Noah? I didn't even know you were still wrestling for them, you know? So I actually asked for the belt to be taken off of me. And that's when I was told that I would lose it to Segura. And great guy to drop it to, I'll tell you that. He's an amazing talent and great human being. So
it's almost like it's such an awesome moment, but they ruined it. You know what I mean? They ruined an awesome resume thing. Because I'm mentioning at the top of the show, wow, GHC Junior Heavyweight Champion, man, it's a huge thing. But they almost like ruined it by not really booking you and not really utilizing you to the full potential of the title. And really, for God knows what reason, not promoting the champion.
Right. I mean, that's the part of it that really just didn't make any sense to me. You know, like, why would you not represent that title on television still? And if you know, and I did think about the possibility that maybe they were trying to establish, like, okay, the belt is no longer like in Japan. Now the belt is in the United States, you know, but I don't know. All I know is that they also didn't put my matches on television anymore. Like, they were booking me, I'd be over there, but my matches weren't televised. And, you know, anything I was doing wasn't really televised. And so it wasn't helping me sell merchandise. It wasn't helping me, wasn't helping my career in Japan to have the belt at that time. So I really wanted to.
Kind of confusing too. It's like, yes, you're the champ here, you're giving you a push, and it's like, yeah, but we're not gonna, you know, really push you, you know what I mean?
That was the weird, yes, it was like, you're exactly, it was like, hey, here's a push, but we're gonna push you real light.
Yeah, weird, very, very weird. So did you ever get an explanation on that? They never explained it to you?
No, they never explained it to me. And so much of it was like that. As a gaijin at the time, you were, I mean, I don't know what it's like there now, but at the time you were very in the dark as to what direction the company was going or what was happening. You know, I guess they made it very clear that it wasn't your company.
It was their company. And even though I was a major part of it for 5 years, you know, it was not mine and never was going to be like my home, you know.
So with Pro Wrestling Noah, you were there for what? It had to be 5 years, right? Basically, you were there for part of the company?
Yep. Yeah, 5 years.
That's pretty good. I mean, as far as like being able to be booked in Japan in one organization for 5 years, right? I mean, that's a good run.
Oh, I thought it was a really great run, and still eternally grateful. And my favorite company that I ever worked for was Noah. Better than any company I ever worked for. I loved working for that company, and I loved the product. I loved the style, the hard-hitting style. Not that, you know, we always hit each other really super hard. There were country towns where we would take it a little easier on each other. But, you know, for the most part, it's pretty hard-hitting wrestling.
You like that style?
Yeah. Misawa... One time he hit me so hard, he slapped me so hard in my head, on the top of my head, that I still feel it sometimes. Like, I think he broke like a nerve or something.
Yeah.
Because it still hurts. There's this spot up here that is just tender to the touch, man. And man, he slapped me so hard, and his forearm, legendary stiffness. Like, it was no joke. I don't know what he weighed. I don't know, but I'll tell you this. He threw a forearm like he was a 400 pounder. His elbow was no joke. You still there?
Yep, still here.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that elbow, if you will, from Misawa was vicious.
Oh, yeah. You know, I had... So, to kind of give you an example of what I mean by storyline and by telling a story when you're in the ring, one of the things that I always do is I try to look at things in wrestling matches that I just hate. Things that I find repetitious or pointless. And one of the things that I find pointless and repetitious and actually insulting is the rollover from the headlock to the pin, 1-2, back to the headlock, back to the pin, 1-2, back to the headlock. Oh, let me grab his tights this time, 1-2. You know, no one wins doing that. So why does every wrestler do it? Why try to roll the guy over and pin him like that? Because no, you're not going to win the match, and every fan knows it. It's just a time killer is all it really is. It's something to keep busy and active while you're calling shot, while you're calling a high spot. That's the hand movement that the magician does, basically. You know, I'm calling one tackle, takedown, but I'm doing the rollover thing so that the referee has something to do. 1-2, and the crowd thinks something's going on, but they're not hearing what I'm doing, you know. And so I was wrestling Ricky Momota over there, and his finisher back in the day was a belly-to-back suplex. And so I came up with this idea, since I was wrestling him and he was an older guy, and it was like the opening match and it wasn't on television. I came up with this idea to finish the match with that rollover thing, you know, from the headlock. And so we worked it the entire match, you know, he's got me in the headlock, and you know, I shoot him off one tackle. He chops me, gets him back in the headlock, takes me down. I roll him over, 1. He comes back, you know, I roll him back over, 1-2. Comes back to his ass, get back up, shoot off, go. We do another little high spot, you know. But each time it's going back to that headlock and back to me rolling him over and getting that one pin, you know, that one count or a 1-2 count. And then at the end of the match, he goes for his finisher and he's got the crowd going and they see that he's getting ready to hit me with his finisher. I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Yeah. He goes for his finisher. As he picks me up, I kick. I came back down. I did a switch. Now I go for his finisher on him, right? I pick him up. He kicks back down. Now he takes me over in an amateur head and arm takeover. He pulls me over. Boom. I roll him over into the pin, but this time I bridge. And when I bridged, I stacked him so deep that I got a 1, 2, 3. And the crowd went effing crazy. As if I'd hit him with some amazing move, you know. But they saw the story. They saw what was happening the entire time. I kept trying to pin him with this little move, this little cheapskate maneuver, you know. And it wasn't working for me. But at the very end, I changed it just enough that I was able to get that 3 count, you know. And Mitsuhara Misawa actually saw me in the hallway after that match and he smiled at me and he goes, "Oh, Modesto-san, good finish." And dude, that made my heart like just explode with joy. You know, Misawa, I can tell you the times he complimented me are on one hand, you know, they're very few. He didn't throw them out easily or readily. If he had something nice to say to you, you really earned it. So
that was a great finish too. That was good psychology. And Misawa's the GOAT giving you that compliment. He's one of the GOATs anyway.
Yeah, 100%, man.
Love that he's you know, making sure that you know that he knows it was a great finish. That's great. Great story.
Well, and I was actually just happy that he watched the match. Hmm. You know, that he had an interest in a match, me and Ricky Momota. You know, that he watched it and then he appreciated what we did, you know, and appreciated the finish, you know. And it's interesting because the rest of the night, every time someone would do that, the crowd bought into it just a little more, you know, and that's one of the things that I miss so much about wrestling. I try so hard to watch current product and it gets really difficult sometimes. What did I see? On NXT, I just watched Chase Yu wrestle Pretty Deadly. And man, it's just a different kind of thing, you know?
Different era.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And wrestling has morphed and done its different things, you know, several times. You know, like, don't get me wrong, RoboCop coming after the Four Horsemen back in the day was arguably one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yes.
The midget that bombed Hogan's boat with the shark fin. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Yes.
Hogan's sitting on his boat, and here comes a midget swimming around with a shark fin and bombs, and he hooks him to Hogan's boat. I've seen some really bad stuff. So I'm not saying that, like, this generation is worse or anything. It's the TV product that I don't like. It's the way it's set up. It's the way again, why do the small little finishers and finishes when I know, I already know that's not the finish. There's no surprise about finishes, and there's a whole lot of the Japanese false finish, false finish, false finish. It's I don't know. It's just a different product to me, and I find myself going and watching like old Portland wrestling, and you know, pulling up old NWA, old Memphis stuff. And then I get my wrestling fix that way, you know, usually. I do like some of the stuff that, you know, they're doing. And I'm a huge fan of Karrion Kross, Killer Kross. You know, he's a great talent. And, you know, so I see, AEW, I enjoy their product very much. I think it's really neat that there are so many companies right now. There's MLW, there's ROH, there's, you know, of course, WWF, NXT. There's all these different companies and divisions of companies where guys can go and, you know, make a living. And I think that's pretty cool to see that. And also, I've seen this explosion in indie wrestling, where independent shows will draw 1,000 to 2,000 people. APW, the company that I started with Roland years ago, it's now running shows at the Cow Palace, and you know, the current guy that runs it is doing a great job, and they sell out, you know, places that they do events in. It's pretty neat to see that explosion of people that love pro wrestling and appreciate it.
Yeah, it's interesting that there's like, it's kind of popular in an odd way, but then the ratings don't show that it's as popular as it used to be. But indies are kind of doing well. There's a bunch of different promotions out there. Like, there's Impact is on TV, WOW is on TV, MLW is on TV, obviously AEW and WWE and NXT, I mean, they're all on TV. It's just so interesting to me. It's like, it is one aspect popular, but in another aspect, it's nowhere near as popular as it used to be.
Well, and I think that's because you're sharing the market. You know, it's like, okay, so you have a burger restaurant in town, all right, let's say. And let's say you've got 5,000 people in your town and everybody comes to your place for burgers, right? And now there's another burger place opens up, and yet another one and another one. Now you got 4 burger places in town. And they're serving 5,000 people. Well, now if you just went in any of those burger places, you might think that burgers aren't all that popular. Maybe people are eating a lot of pizza. Well, burgers are still just as popular as they always were. But now this group of people likes burger A. Another group of people like burger B. You know, so it's like I think you're spreading your money, obviously. You know, if I'm a wrestling fan and I know WWE is coming to town on a given month and there's a, you know, a little indie show coming up, well, I might not go to that indie show and save my money for WWE, right? But if WWE isn't coming for 4 months, and there's this indie company that I've been hearing about, now I go to their show, right? And I go, wow, this is awesome. I really like this. And I get to talk to these wrestlers. Like, they're not superstars that are untouchable to me. And I can buy this dude's shirt and he'll sign it for me. And I might see this guy in WWE one day, but right now he's my friend and I can actually touch this person, right? Yep. And now you get kind of caught up in the indie storyline and what's going on with that company. And and yet you don't have that much money, you know, every month. You don't have more money to spend on wrestling. So maybe you missed the WWE show this year or this time around because it's coming to another city that's close to you, and maybe you'll catch that one instead because you've been spending money at this indie show, you know, or whatever. And so I think it's and obviously Nielsen ratings are really hard to judge now. Most people don't even have cable. You know, so
streaming.
Right. So it's really hard to say, okay, well, here's these numbers, and well, okay, what do those numbers really mean? You know, the Fed has its own station, for God's sakes. Yeah. You know, how could wrestling not be more popular now than ever? It's
crazy. WWE's worth billions. Yeah.
Yeah, it's saturated.
True. Yeah, very saturated. But WWE is just killing it right now. I mean, they're worth billions. If they were to sell, you know, they're probably going to sell for about $8 billion. So it is crazy to think that maybe it's a bit top-heavy, the business.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So as we hit the wind down, we head towards the finish here. Just going back to your career and as far as, like, what you think about what happened – as far as the states, it seemed like you were going to be big with Ring of Honor, but then you kind of, I guess, maybe took more NOAH bookings. I know you were on TNA at one point. I mean, did you think that maybe you could have been a bigger star here in the states if you didn't get booked so much in Japan? Or what did you think about just like Ring of Honor and other situations of TNA and other places? You only worked a little bit.
Well, unfortunately, Ring of Honor was a problem with a guy there named Gabe. And I don't remember what his last name was.
Sapolsky.
Yes. Yeah. That was my problem with Ring of Honor. And it was actually just a misunderstanding. And, but then, you know, words were said. What happened was I went and wrestled for them. They liked me. And Gabe said to me at the venue, he said, "Hey, you know, we want to book you again for this next thing coming up, you know?" And I said, "Okay, that's great. Gabe, can you please email that to me? Because that's how I do all my bookings. I don't do them in the locker room. I don't have a laptop with me. I don't have any way of like making this like in my concrete memory, you know? Can you please email this to me, you know, your proposal? Because that's how I do it." And he said, "Yeah." And he didn't. And I forgot about the conversation and didn't even think I was booked. I went and wrestled in Japan. I came back and Gabe called me and was like, "Dude, what's up? Why haven't you, I don't remember even what it was. He was wanting to talk to me. I don't even remember what it was, like why he was pissed at me, but he called me and he was yelling basically. And I was like, what's wrong? What are you upset about?" And he's like, "Well, I told you were booked, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "No, you were supposed to email me if I was booked. You know, that's the way it's done." And so that's basically what happened, is I missed a booking that I wasn't aware that I had. So, you know, and I didn't have a plane ticket for, you know, like, so I don't know. That's what happened with Ring of Honor. They were just starting, and it was just basically a behind the scenes kind of mess up kind of thing. And that was that. But yeah, I think some of,
I know you briefly MLW and TNA and AAA as well.
Yeah. 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 I definitely made my rounds, man.
When you look at it, do you wish, though, that it worked out differently with ROH? Or were you glad that it didn't work out?
Oh, you know, it is what it is. I don't really look back on it and think one way or the other. You'll make yourself crazy doing that, and you just never know. Sometimes, you know, what's that Garth Brooks song? You got to thank God for unanswered prayers. You know, like I would have loved to work for Ring of Honor more. I thought it was a really cool concept, and I thought it was a cool company, and you know, but when that happened, I was just like, well, I'm not going to worry about it. Like I, you know, I can't control. I mean, that's how everybody was doing business, is email, not just talking to someone and saying, hey, you want to work the next show. And Gabe's stand on it was that he felt they were a big enough company that I should have remembered, you know, like, for example, if Vince McMahon called me and Vince said, hey, Mike, I want to book you on a show coming up in 2 months. Guess what? I'm probably going to remember that show. You know, I'm going to remember that booking. Okay. But at the time, I was working a lot of indies, and every indie has a cool name, you know, CWW or CQW or TWT or whatever it is. Everyone's got a cool name, and it's got, you know, they've got a cool three letter moniker thing. And so to me at the time, Ring of Honor was just another one of those things. It wasn't like a major new, you know, thing. It was a new company. It was coming up. So not to knock them, I just didn't remember the booking, you know, unless you email me. So that's all it was.
And you mentioned that Pro Wrestling Noah obviously was your favorite place to work, but when people remember you and they look back, what do you think is like the legacy or the stamp of Mike Modest? Because great wrestler, you wrestled everywhere. Obviously 5 years with Noah is pretty damn impressive during a streak of Noah where they had some of the best guys in the world on that roster. I mean, geez. So what do you think is like your legacy looking back?
I don't know, man. I don't think I leave much of a legacy. One of the things I really, I think is neat is when I see guys that I trained or that I had part of the training process, even guys that I trained and then they trained somebody. I look at the younger generations coming up and it makes me really proud. You know, there's guys like the Suburban Commandos that they were trained by Joe Applebaumer, who I trained, who he wrestled as Pogo the Clown down in XPW.
Oh yeah.
Vic Grimes I trained, and Vic Grimes is famous for his crazy death defying fall with New Jack.
Yep.
And you know, so I look at a lot of those kinds of things, and also lives that I changed. I had a kid come in one time, try out for wrestling. And I told him, I said, you know, after the tryout, I told him, I said, well, you didn't pass. And I said, you know, it kind of made him cry a little bit. And I said, but hey man, I said, let's not worry about whether or not you can be a pro wrestler or not. Let's worry about whether or not you're going to be alive when you're 21 years old. Hmm. Let's talk about that, because he was so obese, this guy.
Yep.
And so I made a very basic diet plan for him and started him on a very easy, low impact exercise routine. And I told him, you know, to do this for 2 months, and after 2 months, go get yourself a gym membership and then, you know, talk to a trainer there. So 2 years later, this guy comes and he's watching me, you know, train people in the class. And I get out of the ring and I ask him if, you know, he wants information about becoming a wrestler. And he says, no, I actually don't anymore. He goes, I was here a few years ago, and I was really obese. And then I recognized him, and I was like, wow, he had lost like over 200 pounds.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah, it was amazing. He was only like 230 pounds now, and he was 400 and something, you know. And so he and I talked, and one of the things he said to me is he said that about a year after he had been following my, you know, my basic diet program, and he had gotten a gym membership, and he said after about a year he had lost enough weight that he had gotten his first girlfriend ever in his whole life, you know. Nice. And nice. So I think that's my legacy, man, or at least I hope it is. I hope that I've changed a few people's lives. I've done something kind for somebody along the way. Donovan asked me one time, he asked me, he said, why do you think God would make us professional wrestlers? You know, like, what's the point? And I think the point is that we show people how tough the human body is and how tough the human spirit is. And even though we do know how to fall, and even though the ring does give slightly, our bodies take tremendous punishment when we do what we do. And it's amazing how much punishment our bodies can take, you know. And when I was in Japan, I saw a lot of fans that maybe were, you know, had special needs, you know, maybe they had crutches, or there was one guy that had a really bad skin condition, and he would have to wrap his arms up like a mummy, basically, and then sometimes he would bleed through them, and bleed through the bandages. And I think to folks like that, that they're already facing challenges. I think that's one of the things that wrestling really, it helps people with, is if you're already facing a challenge, you look at, okay, well, look at this baby face, look at the challenges he's got going on right now. He's got a manager outside the ring with a cane poking him in the ribs. You know, he's got this and that going on, and yet he's still fighting, you know, and keeping it going. So, but yeah, I think that's the legacy I hope I leave behind, is I hope I change somebody's life for the better. You know, I love when I see, like, you know, Simon Gotch is one of my old students. And I loved when I saw him get his run with WWE, and I love still seeing the things that he's accomplishing and doing. I live vicariously through each one of my students that I've ever had.
Nice. Very cool. So as far as social media and stuff like that, where can everybody find you, see you, where are you at?
Well, I'm on Facebook, but I think I'm all friended out. I think I've got over 5,000 friends again. Every once in a while I cut people that I haven't heard from in forever or whatever, but I think I'm pretty close. But yeah, you can find me on Facebook, Michael Modest, Michael Modest 3 on Instagram, I believe. I'm also on Twitter. And if you're making a film or a TV show, I'm represented by Models Inc. So out of California, out of San Francisco, California. So you can get a hold of Models Inc. if you want to book me for an acting job. Oh, and if you want to see me do a little bit of acting, I'm on Netflix on 13 Reasons Why, season 2, episodes 11 and 12, I believe. I'm just on there briefly. I'm a police officer, but I got a speaking line. It was pretty cool. And now SAG, I'm on the SAG radar, man. So pretty nice. Stoked that's about
where,
that.
That's where you got to be. Nice.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I need to get a couple more really good gigs like that. And then, Be doing a lot. I'd be doing pretty good. I dig it. I really, you know, it's hard because when you're a wrestler, you have this creative thing that you have to have in your life. And when you aren't doing that again, you desperately need to find a different creative outlet, whether it's painting, acting, being a musician, playing guitar, I don't care what it is, but you better find something because otherwise you go nuts.
Very, very true. Well, Mike, thank you so much for all the time today. Really appreciate it.
Right on, John. Pleasure, man.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.